On the History Channel, there's a show called American Pickers. Have you ever watched it? You've got two guys, Frank and Mike, and they travel all over America, literally picking through other people's stuff, looking for valuable things. And it's such an interesting show to me. Like, sometimes they have leads and, like, go to this person's house, they're clearing stuff out, or other times they're just driving by. They knock on somebody's door and said, hey, this is who we are, which leads to all fun, different kinds of results. So they go through all kinds of junk and stuff, and they find some really, really cool things. Now, it's always amazing to see how much stuff people have, isn't it? Like, sometimes it's rooms in their house that's packed, sometimes it's attics or basements, sometimes they have extra buildings or barns just to hold all of the stuff in there, and they're just filled with stuff upon stuff upon stuff. And some of the people they meet were professional collectors, some of them were just regular people who liked stuff, and maybe somebody in their family passed away, or they were trying to make some extra money or clear out some space. But they always find interesting things. They go to these, like, dusty, dirty, dark places, pull out their little flashlights, and they start go, like, I wouldn't step foot in there. Like, I'd pay money to not have to go in, and they, like, elbow deep in, they go through it, and they find really cool things like vintage signs and toys and bikes and cars and all kinds of stuff. There was just an episode, I don't know if you saw it, they got a call from somebody. They found this rusted out van in the middle of the woods in Massachusetts. So they head out there, and it turns out to be Aerosmith's original touring van. Like, when they were nobody, starving artists trying to get started, that was their van. And they lived in there, and they knew somebody who knew somebody, and they got one of the original guitar players to come out and verify that was the real van. And they paid $25,000 for it, because they said it was worth it as a piece of rock and roll history. All right. I love at the end, though, they always tell you, like, okay, this is how much I bid on it, this is how much I think I can sell it for, and this is how much profit I'm going to make. They have so much knowledge about the value of this stuff that they're able to negotiate with people and know, I can spend this much money on it and still make this. And so they negotiate back and forth, sometimes to a good ending, sometimes to not, to get the price that they want because they know how much it's worth. Now, I see junk. I see broken, rusted, worn out over time things, but they see treasure, and they see artifacts, and they see these important parts of history that are worth saving, and I see garbage, and they see value, right? Like, how they see it, it's that whole one person's garbage, another person's treasure. But it's so interesting to me because they know how to value this stuff. They know the price, how much it costs, how much it's worth, and how much money they can make off of it. And when I look at my own life, it's easy to place values on the things that are in my life. Like, I know how much it cost us to pay for our house. I know how much my car costs. We have to make a monthly payment. I know how much I need to buy groceries every week. I know how much the furniture costs. I know how much it costs to keep my children clothed. I know how much the stuff in my life costs. I can put monetary values to it, the things that we have. But what's infinitely harder to value is the intangible things in our life. I can say how much my house cost, but it's infinitely harder to put a price tag on the relationships that we're growing inside our house. I mean, I know how much it costs to purchase the things that we need, but it's so much harder to price tag the value of our souls, the quality of the personhood that we're trying to go into, the value that we see in our life. And Jesus knew that. Listen to what he says in Mark chapter 8. He said, calling the crowd to him with his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? What can a man give in return for his soul? It says, we know how much things in our life are worth, how much they cost, but how in the world do we ever put a value on life? How do we ever say this is what a soul is worth? And Jesus says there's two different ways that you can do life. One of these ways is going to give life, and one of these ways is going to lose it. He says there's two different ways that you can approach it, and it's kind of counterintuitive. It's not the way that we naturally go through it. So let's break these down for a second. So he said, okay, this is a way that you can do life that you're actually going to lose it. He said, whoever saves his life would lose it. And we think, Jesus, like, that doesn't sound reasonable. Like, how in the world does trying to save life mean that you lose it? Like, that doesn't, how does that work? And he's Jesus, so he gets it, and he's smart, and he's thinking at whole other layers than we are. But this is where our values come into play, because what I value most in my life, that's what I spend my time with. What I say has the highest value, that's where I put my time and my energy and all that I am. So when we think about the things that have the highest value in our life, usually stuff comes into play. Our possessions, our things that we own, things that make life easier and things that make life more comfortable, things we worked really hard to pay for and things that we're proud of and things that make us feel good. And we can do life in the kind of way that gets more of that, more of that, more of that. But what is the cost that's involved? I love this quote from Bertrand Russell. He says, "The most valuable things in life are not measured in monetary terms. The really important things are not houses and land, stocks and bonds, cars, real estate, but friendships, trust, confidence, empathy, mercy, love, and faith." Saying the most valuable things in our life aren't the ones you can actually put a price tag on. They're not actually the ones that you order online or you can buy in a store. But somehow, even though we know this, it still happens that the ones we give the most time and energy and invest our life in turns out to be stuff. And what we do daily shows what we value. What we do repeatedly shows what has the most important values in our life, because our values define what it is that we really care about. Not what we say we care about, because it's easy to say, this is important to me, I value this, this matters, but what we do every single day actually reflects what our values really are. We give the best of ourselves to the things that we value. We give the best of our time, the best of our energy, the best of our resources to the things that we say matter the most. And it shows up in the time that we give it. What happens is when we choose our values, we take actions based on them. And they're those beliefs that motivate us to act one way or another. They're those guides that help kind of guide our behavior in the person that we want to be. And we say we value things, but our life actions reflect an entirely different set of values. My time and intention reflect what my values really are. And what happens is we say we value certain things, but our time and energy and everything goes into what we say matters the most. And this is where materialism becomes a really big struggle. Because this idea is we get so preoccupied with stuff, possessions, things that we need, and the image that it helps us portray, getting more, having the things that we have, and how it makes me look. And Jesus says, that is a way to do life. You can approach life that way. And what happens is it's a very me-centered approach. Life revolves around me, what I want, what I need. It's all about me first and getting the stuff that I want. But what's crazy is, even just aside from what Jesus has said, you can look into all the research that psychologists and sociologists have been doing over the years about what materialism does to a society and an individual, and all of them agree that is absolutely destructive to life. People who build their life values on materialism find themselves socially set apart, they can't connect well with other people, and self-destructive. They never have enough. They never have the content, happy feeling they think that they should have, and it traps into this comparison mode, and it's always what somebody else has and how to get better and how to get more. And they said again and again and again, life's built on materialism diminishes our well-being. It takes away from our personhood. It takes away from our feeling of good enough, because there's always something better. There's always something more new. There's always more to have, because stuff comes and goes and money comes and goes and the people that like you come and go. And none of those things end up making us as happy as we thought that they should. They never end up solving our problems. Like, you can look at all the people who've won the multi-million dollar lotteries and they're not happy. They're not better off with all of this money because they're still the same people and they still have the same problems, but now they just have bigger problems and more stuff involved in their problems. Jesus says, if we spend our life here trying to save the comforts and the image and the ideas of what we think that we need, he says we end up losing the life that we should value the most. He says we destroy ourselves there. We diminish our well-being. Because in that place that's all centered around me, 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 my image and what I want and what makes me happy, we never find value and purpose in that place. We never live our best lives when we're consumed by stuff and possessions and things. It says we're never going to grow our souls and the quality of our character by only trying to gather more things. We'll never find happiness and joy in that place. It says, in fact, that is the very place that you will find ruin. That is the very place that you will waste your entire life trying to find more, more, more. Because a life centered on me, on my ego, loving myself, is hurtful. And it's destructive. He says, we can do life that way. We can make it all about what we can acquire. But in the end, Jesus says, we will lose our lives in that place. We will destroy ourselves in the pursuit of more and waste all of the life that we have in that place. There's an interesting story. I don't know if you've heard it before, but it's about How to Trap a Monkey. And the story goes that if you just get like a big gourd, some type of big squashy type thing and cut a hole in it, the hole is small enough for the monkey to fit its hand in. You put a little piece of food, a little treat in there. And what happens is the monkey puts his hand in there. And once he grabs onto the food that's in there, he can't get his hand back out. It's stuck. But the gourd is too heavy for him to drag around. So he's literally trapped. And we're all going, silly monkey, like, let go of the food and you have your freedom, right? Like, all you have to do is drop that food. It's not worth being trapped. You're stuck. We all see that when we look at the monkey. But the problem is God looks at us and says, silly Katie, stop it. Stop holding on to that thing that you think you need so much that's trapping you and offering you no freedom and no joy. It's so much harder to look at our own life and say, what am I clinging to with all of my life? Because I'm saying I need it. It makes me happy. It's going to make my life so much better that I won't let go of. And I've made all of my attachments to these things. And in the end, it's really trapping me in a life that does not grow the soul that God has given us. In the end, it's robbing me of the freedom that Christ intended me to have if I would just let go and have the freedom that he gave us. Jesus said, that's one way of doing life. And if we do life there, clinging, clinging, clinging with all that we have to these things that we think that we need and make us happy, we're never going to find the joy that he created us for. It says, but in contrast, there is another way to do life. Says, whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. And this is where it gets like a little bit uncomfortable. I love it. My friends and I who've been studying this Christian series by Andy Stanley, he says, you know, you can't really find the word Christian in the Bible. It's not really defined, but you can find disciple. You can find what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And this is what Jesus says means to follow him. It means you have to deny something about yourself, pick up your cross, and follow him. Nothing about that sentence feels comfortable. Like, nothing about that sentence feels easy. There's something so awkward about the word deny. Like, I don't want to deny. I want to say yes, right? Like, that feels so much infinitely better to say. And if you look at what deny means, it means to literally forget oneself, to lose sight of oneself and one's own interest. And what Jesus is saying is there is a way we can do life in the kind of way that I'm so busy focused on the right thing that I forget my ego in the process. I'm making my way so progressively forward towards the person he's called me to be that I'm forgetting my ego and myself in the process. It's no longer centered around me. It's no longer a life built on the things that make me the most comfortable and make life the most easy, but it is a refusal. That's another part of denial. It is a refusal to let my entire existence be wrapped up in myself, because that way lies ruin. That way lays pain and hurt and disappointment. But Jesus says there's another way. There is a way that says, if I'm going to follow him, there are things that I have to deny myself. Not because God is mean, not because God doesn't want us to have fun or to live these miserable, dreary, rotten lives. God is fun. He created everything. You can't look around the world and not see the fun of God. But if I don't deny certain things to myself, I hurt myself in the process. This is easy to see in certain aspects of our life, right? Like with my children, this is super easy to see. My kids would stay up all night if I let them. Like if we didn't have established bedtimes, they would stay up all night and they would watch shows and read books and do all of the fun stuff that they want to do. And I like hanging out with them. I enjoy their company, but I also know that when my children don't go to bed, they're miserable. And they're tired and they're grouchy and everything is terrible and everything is so much harder and everything, you know. But I'm not doing it to be mean. Like, I'm not denying them the pleasure of staying up to be mean. I have their best interest at heart. I know they need a certain amount of sleep to function as normal human beings the next day. And so we have to say no to staying up because we have their best interest in mind, right? Like, I know how to see this in my life. I know I have to say no to certain kinds of eating and certain kinds of food. Otherwise, my clothes don't fit and I feel miserable about life. We've had an obscene amount of Halloween candy in our house over the last week. And normally, like, I'm not a crazy candy person. It doesn't really faze me. But I think I ate 5 years worth of candy just in the last couple of days. And here's the problem. Like, I'm even at the point where it doesn't really taste good anymore, but I'm just eating it to eat it. Like, all the good stuff is gone. Like, we're bottom of the barrel. It's not even the stuff that I'm, like, dying to have. But I can't stop. It's there, and I'm just eating it to eat it. I've lost the enjoyment, but I still can't stop myself, which is why I have all of these boundaries in my life for how I eat and what I put in my mouth, because if I don't say no, I feel miserable. Like, I've never gorged myself on everything that I wanted to eat and be like, man, that was such a good decision. I feel so good about myself right now. Like, I've never had to unbutton the top button of my pants and been like, go girl, that was amazing, right? Like, instead, I'm miserable and going, why did I do that to myself? I know better. I know that this is where it ends up every time. We know in certain areas of our life, there are things we have to say no to because we've experienced the miserableness of not saying no to them. We know there are areas in our life that if we don't create boundaries, we end up feeling miserable. And when we do say no, the payoff is worth it, right? The payoff is worth it to have my clothes fit. The payoff is worth it to have my children happy and not grouchy. But there are whole other areas of our life that we let go unchecked. There are whole other areas of our life that we've never said, maybe I should question myself on that. Maybe I should be suspicious that that's what I want to do, right? Like emotions that we've never said, hey, wait a second, that's not right. Or feelings that we've let rage out of control, or desires that aren't healthy to our well-being, or actions that don't help us be the men and women that we've said we want to be. And there are places in our life where we've never even said, I need to consider what would happen if I started saying no here. I need to really think about if I put up a healthier boundary and denied myself something here, how much greater the payoff might be in another area. There are emotions I have that I should question. All of us should. We don't like the right things enough, and we like the wrong things more than we should. And we should question ourselves on why. One of the weirdest things that I cannot believe how the brain works is anytime we're processing information, data, it goes through the emotional part of our brain before it reaches the logical part of our brain, which means I am always responding emotionally before my rational thinking side has even had a chance to say, like, hey, wait a minute, that's crazy town, right? Like, I have to think things through emotionally before I think through them rationally. And guess what? My emotions lie. They're not always true or real. And I've had times where I look back and I'm like, well, that was probably an overreaction. That was probably excessive. I could have really done well to have 5 minutes to just make myself pause and think about that before I responded. I should question my emotions. Just because I have certain emotions doesn't mean they should have free rein to decide who I'm going to be and what I'm going to do. There are areas of my life I should be suspicious that I'm always right. We all have this. In my family, we're all vocal about this. Like, we have lots of debates and bets about who's right and I'm right, and it gets interesting. But we have areas where we say, I'm right and you're wrong and I refuse to listen to you. I should be suspicious of that. I should be very suspicious of areas in my life that I've said, you have nothing to teach me about this and I'm not even going to listen to you. Because when I'm there, I am not a teachable person. And the second I become an unteachable person, I stop growing. Every one of us have areas to grow. Anytime that I say, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm perfect, you're the problem, that should be a huge red flag that waves in my mind and my thinking. And I don't care what the issue is. I don't care at all which side of the issue it comes out on. I should be suspicious of my thinking that says I'm always right, because I will never grow when I'm in that place. What happens is there are areas in my life I have to start doing an honest evaluation and say, what have I let go unchecked for too long? What have I absolutely let myself get way too carried away in? And I need to start saying no. I need to find some ways to deny myself this, because the payoff is so much better than when I do. I mean, when's the last time I even just thought, is there anything I'm doing that's destructive to my soul? When's the last time I even just spent any time thinking, what in my life is robbing me of the joy that Christ intended me to have? I mean, when's the last time I just chunked out some space in my life to say, what are things that are damaging my character and I need to stop saying yes to them and let go? And it's not a one-time thing. Like, in my mind, I think when I exercise, that should be good for like 5 years. I mean, I worked hard. I sweat a little bit. Like, I should be solid now for 5 years, right? Like, that's how it should work. But you know it doesn't work that way. I know it doesn't work that way. And then sometimes I'll even go like 4 to 6 weeks and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have been exercising for 6 weeks. Number one, I should have a six pack by now. Number two, I deserve something because I did all of this hard stuff, right? That's not how it works. Like, when we say there are things in my life I have to say no to and there are things I have to deny, I have to do it daily. It's not a one and done process. I have to come back to it again and again and again and again, because that's where I'm going to find ways to live my very best life. And look, it matters who told us this. Christ told us this. The very one who gave up more than we can ever imagine is the one who gave us this advice. There is nothing I can give up that is worth more than what Christ gave up for me. There is absolutely nothing in my life that I can deny that is greater than what Christ denied himself when he picked up the cross and died for us. There's nothing I can say no to that's harder than the no Christ said for us. The very one who says, follow me. The very one who said, it's going to be hard sometimes. It's going to be like picking up a painful cross and following me, gave up his own comfort, gave up his wonderful spot in heaven and came down to our ugly, messy, loud world and bore a heavier cross than any of us will ever have to carry. He's the one who said, when you follow me, this is part of the process, but the payoff is a life lived better than you could live any other way. And because he did that for us, we get to have life. Millions and millions of people throughout time and history have had a new life because of the death Christ died for us. It's not easy, but it is valuable. It won't come naturally, but it will be worth it because the life that we will live for Jesus Christ. And it's going to require faith, and it's going to require courage and persistence and strength, and it's going to require all the time we can put with Jesus Christ every single day where we spend time reconnecting with him so he can remind us why it's worth it. So he can say, this is why your no here is going to help you be a better person here. Time in our life where our hearts are wide open to him, where we give ourselves space to just say, Christ, show me what's in me that shouldn't be. Christ, shine a light on what I've let go for too long, areas that aren't healthy for my soul. He says we can do life this way, and when we do, we end up saving the very life that he intended us to have. Because look at what he says. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? What can a man give in return for his soul? Jesus is saying, what does it matter if you get every single thing you thought you ever wanted, but you lose yourself in the process? What could you ever trade your soul for? What could ever be more valuable than the soul that you've been given? Because we have a body, but we have a soul too, and our soul animates us, and it's the essence of who we are and our feelings and our desires and our affections and our aversions, and our bodies wither and die, but our souls grow. Our outer self is wasting away, but our inner being is going greater and stronger and more beautiful day by day by day. And the lives that we live today are either nurturing the soul that God gave us or doing damage to who we should be in the long run. He says, there is nothing equal in value. There is nothing equal in benefit to the soul that you have. You could get every single material thing you ever thought was important. You could have every amount of money and prestige and honor and friends and houses and stuff and cars and clothes, but if it costs you your soul to get it, it's not worth it. There is no cost, no benefit, no price high enough in which we trade the value of our souls, because your life is what is valuable. It's you that has worth. It's you that has value in the world. But here's the tension. Most of us don't believe that. I mean, we might say that we do, but somewhere deep, dark inside of us, we've grown up thinking that we're the problem, that there's something flawed in us, or we lack some important characteristic that everybody else seems to have and we don't have it, and we don't think we're worthy enough. We don't think we have enough value. We think we're flawed and lacking. But Christ says, you're valuable because I say that you're mine. You have the potential to be great because you were made in the image of a great God. Every one of us was created with an intention and a purpose. There's no accidents. No matter how your life started, there is no accidents in who God brings into this world. We are valuable because God says that we are. We matter because God gives us part of who he is through Jesus Christ to be the people that he's called us to be. It was intentional and it was on purpose. Every single one of us has the potential to do awesome, great things, but it starts with us finding our value in God first. My value does not come from how much money is in my bank account. My worth isn't steeped in what I have compared to everybody else. My honor in this world isn't based in how many people like my Instagram post. Instead, I get to say my value is in God. And when I do, it resets my priorities and it shifts my way of thinking and how I do life. And I get to start over. And I get to find value in who I am in our relationship to Jesus Christ. And we get to live our lives more than just for today. Because we were created with gifts and talents and worth to use in this world. And we get to spend the rest of our lives living out that purpose, using these talents that God has given us to do. It's why we're constantly challenging each other to try something new and go on a new adventure and connect in a team, not because God can't do it without us, but because when we say yes, God does something in us that we can't do any other way. It grows us. We need it. We need the connection. We need the service. We need the time where we step away from focus on ourselves and focus on who God's called us to be instead. Instead of using our life to just attain more stuff, we get to say, how do I use this small, measured amount of time that God has given me to grow, to give, and to make a difference in the world for good? I mean, just imagine for a second how different life could be if our highest value was placed on loving God and growing the soul that He's given us to nurture over a lifetime. Imagine how different our life could be if we trusted Him and had the courage to give all that we have to serve Him daily. And then because our faith in God was strong, we were motivated to love other people better, and we were encouraged to take better care of our relationships and our families and our friends and our coworkers and the people that we don't even know. Imagine how much better the world could be if we were motivated by generosity and sacrifice instead of just getting ourselves further ahead. Imagine how much different the world could look if more people said, I care more about what I can do to serve other people than I care about what I can get for myself. Imagine how the world might be if we started setting a different example about what it looks like to live with grace and forgiveness. If we just started going out of our way to be kind to other people. Our values help us do that. The things that we say we value the most help us make the decisions that direct us in that way. And when our values flow from a relationship with God, they help us prioritize what comes first. We're saying, I know that this life comes and goes, but the soul God has given us, that goes on for eternity. And what am I doing to nurture the soul that God has given us? Our values help us choose how to do life. And here's what I want to challenge us with this week. How have you been doing life? Has the choices you've been making nurtured your soul and grown your character and done life in the kind of way that is saving this eternal soul that God's given you? Or is it just diminishing a little bit more day after day after day? Because look, we get to choose. Nobody enforces this on us. Nobody's making this choice for us. We all get to choose how are we going to do life this week. And Christ says, when you do life in this kind of way, you are going to grow and your life is going to be better because of it. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would be with us. I pray that you would do a good work in our hearts this week, Father, that we would be open to you. I pray that you would shine a light on the things that we need to start saying no to. I pray, Father, that instead of investing, Father, in a life based on stuff, you would show us how to invest in a life based on you. I pray that you would give us the courage and the strength and the persistence to stick with it day after day after day. Help us, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.